Are you in security?
Yes, you know, I'm looking for you and in general.
Really, oh, what is your name?
Eve.
Oh, hi,
really,
Eve.
Madame, you are incredible.
Thank you so much.
Yes, very crazy.
She is in democracy now.
What is your media, madame? What is your media?
We do a public television radio show called Democracy Now around the world.
Are you come from USA?
New York.
New York, okay.
Yes.
Incredible.
What is your name?
Eve.
Eve.
And what's your last name?
Sorry? Eve.
Eve, sorry.
Eve. No, thank you, madame. On to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, I tried to ask the president of the COP, who happens to be the head of one of the largest oil companies in the world, ADNOC, the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. It's remarkable that the head of the oil company is the head of the UN Climate Summit. If he's for fossil fuel phase out, in the past he has said no. And also why there's a record number of fossil fuel lobbyists here. I tried. Anyway, they say there'll be a news conference tomorrow, so we'll try again then. Well, in fact, there was no news conference called today by Sultan al-Jaber. What the aide said wasn't true. It's past 5 o'clock today, so I guess there are still a few more hours. But to talk more about the UN Climate Summit, we're joined by Harjeet Singh, head of Global Political Strategy with Climate Action Network, with the Fossil Fuel Nonproliferation Treaty, a global initiative to phase out fossil fuels and support a just transition. He's based in New Delhi, India, but is joining us here from Dubai. It's great to have you back on the show. Let's just talk about the significance of what I was questioning Dr. al-Jaber about. One, this record number of lobbyists. I was just speaking to a young activist, said, she's actually not, there are far fewer proportionally climate activists here than at previous summits because so many of them were limited in getting credentials. And yet it's the largest UN climate summit ever with the by far largest number of oil, fossil fuel lobbyists. How does that affect these talks and what needs to be done here?
Thank you very much, Amy, for having me again on your show. Always a pleasure. It is deeply, deeply problematic to see how fossil fuel lobbyists are taking over these climate talks. And that's exactly the concern that we have been raising right from the day one when it was announced that UAE is going to be the host of climate talks. And we got an oil executive leading the conversation here. And this is our fear really coming true. We can't just allow fossil fuel industry to define what needs to happen here. We want governments to regulate these industries that has caused the problem in the first place. And we are here to demand that we need fossil fuel phase out in a just and equitable manner. And that language is what we are expecting to appear in the next few days, because that's the message that we have to send to the world, which is already facing climate crisis. We cannot afford any other language which creates any confusion or leaves any kind of loopholes that fossil fuels can still continue. And we just cannot do that as we see how rising temperatures are wrecking the planet.
He said a fossil fuel phase out. The other question I was asking him would mean, well, taking the world back into caves. What is the sustainable answer?
We already have renewable energy, really taking it to a level where it is comparable to fossil fuel investments. The point here is that how we can use those solutions. You know, the reason fossil fuel industry is surviving because of the subsidies. And I must remind everybody that as per the report of IMF, the subsidies are to the tune of $11 million per minute. Let me repeat, $11 million per minute. And if you add all the externalities, fossil fuel industry cannot survive. On the other hand, you see investments not going sufficiently to the renewable energy industry. And that's what is needed. So we have solutions, but we are not investing enough in the solutions, and that's why fossil fuel industry is surviving. And that's what we need to be questioning. Science is absolutely clear that we need to phase out fossil fuels. We need to do that in a just and equitable manner.
So, Harjeet Singh, you're wearing blue today. If you can explain why you're doing that. And also, you just came from a loss and damage protest. We've started talking about loss and damage again this week at the UN Climate Summit, but talk about why that was the focus of your protest outside.
As activists, we are wearing blue today, and that's a color we associate with loss and damage. We did that last year in our protest, and just 2 hours ago, we actually protested, saying that how we've got the fund, which was historic, getting it on the very first day of COP, unprecedented, but it's not enough. The reality is that we only got a couple of $100 million as a pledge when the need is hundreds of billions of dollars. That's the scale. People are suffering right now, and we are not getting sufficient money to fill the fund.
And again, say what it means, what it would be used for, who would pay into it, and who would get that support.
Let's understand that we got the convention on climate change 30 years ago. We were expecting the emission reductions to happen to a level where we will not be seeing this crisis, but we did not see any reduction in the emissions. We did not also provide support to communities and countries to adapt, to be more prepared to deal with disasters. And here we are seeing climate emergency, you know, all around us in the form of increasing floods and raging wildfires and sea levels rising. People are losing their homes, their farms, their income, and they are being displaced. There is no support available from this system. So after fighting for 30 years, we eventually got this decision last year in Sharm el Sheikh at COP27, and on the very first day of COP28, finally, the decision is also to operationalize, which means that now we will be able to support people who are losing their homes so that they can rebuild their lives and livelihoods. But the money is not enough. So yes, it is historic that we have been able to establish, and it's a victory of climate justice movement that puts so much of pressure on the leaders so that we get this fund. But we don't want to create another fund which is not enough or which is an empty shell. We need to be responding to the calls of people who are facing this crisis right now, how they can restart their lives and rebuild their homes.
What does global stock trade mean?
So global stock take is a process that was agreed in 2015 as part of Paris Agreement, because when the pledges were put together, it was clear that we are looking at a 3 degree of warming, which is going to be catastrophic by the end of century. Now, we required a process so that we can continuously ramp up and ratchet up our ambition. So this is a very unique process. If you look at many international agreements, don't have it. So 2023 is the first year when the global stock take means we are looking at where we are, and then we are also going to determine how we need to increase our ambition over the next few years so that we can stay below the target of 1.5 degrees temperature rise Celsius. And we don't cross that threshold. So it's a very important process. And in fact, as we speak, the discussions are happening on this global stock take, which includes all the elements, talk about mitigation, adaptation, and loss and damage, and most importantly, finance and technology.
How does climate change affect India? How does climate change play out every day?
Well, India is a large country with 7,500 kilometer long coastline, and you talk of any geoclimatic zone India has, and it's extremely vulnerable. In fact, it has been ranked one of the top 5 and top 10 countries over the last few years in terms of vulnerability. And we have seen some heat waves which were unprecedented in the last few years. We have seen how floods are becoming far more intense. We have seen some devastating storms and people getting displaced. And there are now studies which say that India is going to lose its GDP by 3% over the next few years, and how it's going to lose billions of dollars over the next few years, and those impacts are already happening. So countries are vulnerable. They are suffering, they are without any reason, because they are not the ones who have caused the problem in the first place. So, and there are many more developing countries who are in worse situation than India.
We have 30 seconds left. It's yours.
Well, I would say we have to make sure that we get a decision on fossil fuel phase out, because even when we talk about loss and damage, we know very clearly more fossil fuels equals more loss and damage. So we have got this decision, but unless we address the cause of the climate crisis, which is fossil fuels, we will not be able to deal with the climate emergency. And we have to ramp up adaptation finance, because people need to be now prepared to deal with disasters, and also they need to get support when they're suffering. So we need to work across the board on all these three pillars of climate action.
Harjeet Singh, head of global political strategy with Climate Action Network on the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, a global initiative to phase out fossil fuels and support a just transition, usually based in New Delhi, India. Coming up next, we look at how the UAE is buying up land across Africa as part of an initiative called Blue Carbon. Back in a minute. Ikiwa kama unitaki kaka, bora unambie mapema. Wajua maisha ya siku hizi ni ya kujitegemea kaka. Lazima uelewe sana. Unayo nisema kwa watu sio jambo la busara. Wanawake wako wengi wazuri sana. If You Don't Want Me by the Tanzanian Nuta Jazz Band. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We turn now to look at what's being called the new scramble for Africa. The United Arab Emirates, where we are right now, is using its vast oil money to buy up the rights to land in many African countries in order to sell carbon credits to major polluters. Just over a year ago, in 2022, a member of the UAE royal family set up a private investment company called Blue Carbon to facilitate the deals. The company's negotiating to purchase the rights to about a tenth of Liberia's landmass, a fifth of Zimbabwe, and swaths of Kenya, Zambia, and Tanzania. The Guardian newspaper reports the deal involves land about the size of the United Kingdom. Blue Carbon would then sell carbon credits linked to forests preserved on this land. Many critics have likened the UAE's plan to a new form of colonialism. We're joined now by Mohamed Addo, the director of the climate and energy think tank Power Shift Africa. In September, his group published a report titled The Africa Carbon Markets Initiative, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. Mohamed, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much.
Can you explain what this Blue Carbon Initiative is, buying up a tenth, a fifth of the land of these countries?
So what they're doing effectively after failing to mitigate at the source is by what they call carbon credits. But in fact, those are just permits to pollute. So rather than actually containing emissions and cutting them at the source so that we can decarbonize and be able to help the world hold climate heating to below 1.5 degrees, what they're doing is buying large tracts of land in Africa so that they can have a pipeline of, you know, permits that gives them the right to continue to pollute at the source. So if you look at it, you know, the continent of Africa, with its 17% of the global population, accounts for less than 4% of the emissions. But we're suffering fast and worse the impact of climate change. And the rich world have promised Africa and other developing countries climate finance to help grow in a climate-compatible way. They failed to deliver that finance. Now they want to basically buy on the cheap African lands so that they have a pipeline of carbon credits.
So what happens to the people who live on those lands? Let's look at Liberia. They buy up a tenth of the land, the UAE, this private company.
So what they're effectively doing is displacing Africans off their land so that they can actually be able to attain the right to continue to pollute.
Here.
So,
or wherever the company is.
So all these fossil fuel companies and the rich world have promised the world that they will help prevent dangerous interference with our climate system. What that requires is for them to actually cut emissions, massive cut in emissions, so that we can be able to contain the rise in emissions. So they're failing to do that. They've also failed to provide the climate finance that the developing world requires. Now, to add insult to the injury, they now want to forcefully displace our people off their land so that they can actually be able to have a secure pipeline of permits to continue to pollute.
Permits to pollute.
That is what they are. So don't buy this false idea that they are buying carbon credits. There's nothing called carbon credits. What they're doing is actually commodifying nature, and in the process of commodifying nature, give people cramps so that they can actually continue to pollute. And so the developing countries who have been promised climate finance that has not been delivered are now being asked to again contribute to the climate actions that the world so much requires, but through a false and a dangerous destruction.
So Mohamed Adou, presumably the country has to agree to this. What does the Liberian government gain from this?
So this is a coalition between our political elites and the historic polluters. So what they do is give cramps to these countries so that they can be able to actually attain the right over that land in the name of a carbon credit. And what a carbon credit is basically is an imaginary commodity, a one ton of emission that is actually avoided or cut through a project in Africa so that the companies in the rich world who continue to pollute can then offset their emissions by buying those permits. So it's actually a dangerous destruction. What we need today in the world is to decarbonize. Massive decarbonization. So rather than actually massively decarbonizing...
And how do you decarbonize?
So the bottom line is you need to actually phase out fossil fuels. So the reason UAE are buying these lands is so that they can offset their emissions and continue to sustain this false notion that we can continue to increase our emissions, but buy on the cheap African land so that we can continue to sustain this false fossil economy.
Your organization is called Power Shift Africa. How do you shift the power? And are you alleging that with these different countries, we'll put up the map? I mean, it's not just Liberia, it's Tanzania, it's Kenya, it's Zambia, it's Zimbabwe, that government officials are on the take?
60 years ago, African countries attained their independence. We were able to kick, you know, colonizers out of our land. What they're doing now is basically introducing this new form of colonialism, where they basically grab our land, but with our permission, so that they can continue to emit. And Africa is on the front line, suffering first and worst the impact of climate change. What African people require is for us to decarbonize the global economy. Just like the colonists have structured African societies and economies as a place where they will source cheap raw materials, now Africa has been turned to be the place where they will source cheap permits to continue to pollute.
Mm. Well, we're going to continue this discussion tomorrow with Nimo Bassi, another African leader in the fight to preserve the environment. He from Nigeria, Mohamed Adou. I want to thank you so much for being with us. Director of the Climate and Energy Think Tank, Power Shift Africa. We'll link to the report, The Africa Carbon Markets Initiative, A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. We are broadcasting from COP28 in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, as Russian President Vladimir Putin has also arrived in the country today, but will not attend the summit. This is Putin's first trip to the region since Russia attacked Ukraine. He'll also travel to Saudi Arabia to meet with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Putin faces an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court over war crimes in Ukraine, but neither Saudi Arabia nor the UAE have signed the International Criminal Court, the ICC, treaty, so they're not obligated to detain him. Today, activists here at COP28 protested Putin's visit with signs that read, "Your power is coming to an end and fossil fuel dictators out." And Ukrainians also accuse Putin of committing environmental crimes in their country. This comes as Russia welcomed a U.S.-led initiative to triple global nuclear power capacity in a rare agreement as 21 nations propose ways to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050, including France, the U.K., and Ukraine, in addition to the U.S. At COP28 Tuesday, that's today. Yesterday, U.S. Special Climate Envoy John Kerry launched an international engagement plan to boost nuclear fusion that involves 35 nations.
I believe, based on friends I have, people I respect, evidence that I've read, that there is potential in fusion to revolutionize our world and to change all of the options that are in front of us and provide the world with abundant and clean energy.
For more, we're joined here at COP28 by Vladimir Slivyak, co-chair of the leading Russian environmental organization, EcoDefense. He won the 2021 Right Livelihood Award, the Alternative Nobel Peace Prize, for defending the environment and mobilizing grassroots opposition to the coal and nuclear industries in Russia. He has left Russia now. Where do you live right now?
In Germany.
You live in Germany. I want to start off by asking you about this initiative that's really being pushed by the United States. Mm-hmm. So methane, fossil fuel emissions, they're really being the push is to cut them down. Mm-hmm. And people like John Kerry, the climate envoy from the United States, are saying nuclear is the answer.
Well, I think he's wrong, and I think it's a big mistake by Biden administration to push for it. And there are three reasons for this. First of all, we need action on climate now, but nuclear power, even if it brings some effect, it will be very little effect, and we have to wait for quite a long time, like 20 or 30 years, until there will be some effect. Well, the second thing is that it's risky technology. It produces nuclear waste that will be dangerous for thousands of years, and our next generations will have to pay for this nuclear waste to make it safe for safe storage. And the third thing is that nuclear power is the most expensive among all sources of energy. So, like, when you promote nuclear power, you have to understand that it's diverting resources from renewable energy, and the renewable energy is the most efficient answer to climate change.
So it's interesting. I mean, you have, to say the least, the U.S. and Russia at loggerheads, for example, over the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But here, they don't disagree.
Well, this is very, disturbing and disappointing thing, because we haven't seen the U.S. doing promotion of nuclear at previous COPs, but unfortunately they started to do what Russians been doing for quite a long time, promoting nuclear, which is clearly a false solution to climate change.
Biden did not come to the U.N. climate summit. Apparently, Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, is not either, but he did come to the UAE. He was in Abu Dhabi this morning. He's going to Saudi Arabia. Were you surprised by this? This is a rare trip outside of Russia. What do you think he's here for?
Well, I was very surprised, because Vladimir Putin was not really going internationally for quite a long time. I think there are two important things for Putin here. One is oil, and they're talking about oil prices and how they regulate oil drilling and sale of oil around the world to keep prices up. And the second thing is, of course, I think it's weapon. Russia needs more weapon. It's not producing enough weapon for war in Ukraine. Not as much as using in Ukraine. I think Putin will be looking for some new supplies from Arabic countries.
Why do you think the U.S. is promoting nuclear power right now?
Well, I think it's about the money for Western nuclear industry, because it was a long time ago when investors stopped to invest into nuclear because, well, it's risky, it's always over budget, it's taking long to build them. It was a pretty much economic disaster in the past. So investors don't want to put money in it anymore. And what governments obviously came up with is to push for nuclear power here at the climate negotiations, funds just for one simple reason, to be able to take money from a climate fund and use it for construction of new nuclear power plants. It's not about climate, it's about saving mostly Western nuclear industry.
When I was in Rivne and Lviv in Ukraine a few years ago after the Katowice UN climate summit, there were monuments to the people of Chernobyl, and they are all over Ukraine and Russia. If you can talk about the significance of Chernobyl shaping your opposition to nuclear power, and then how you see renewable energy being the answer, even in the short term.
Well, when we speak about climate change and what we're going to do about it, then renewable energy obviously is the first choice for a reason that it's cheaper than nuclear. It's much faster to be installed, so means gives you much faster result in or effect in emission reduction. This is what we are looking for today. Nuclear is a risky technology. We had Fukushima, we had Chernobyl before it. Chernobyl basically led to a collapse of the Soviet Union in the end. Chernobyl provoked the new civil society movements, anti-nuclear movements in the Soviet Union that became active and in the end of 1980s succeeded to actually entirely stop the development of nuclear power in the Soviet Union. It was later restarted, mostly when the Putin came in, it went on a mass scale. Yeah.
Can you talk about what's happening at these climate talks? Do you hold out hope? And also a new report that's just been released on the environmental effects of Russia's invasion and war on Ukraine.
Well, first of all, about this climate talks, it's a scandal by design because the president of this COP is actually a head of a big oil company, one of the leading in the world. So the guy who's supposed to push other countries to reach an agreement on ending fossil fuel is actually interested in promotion of oil contracts for his company. So I don't know what kind of result we can expect from this COP. It's true that a couple of days ago, Ukraine presented an assessment of environmental damage from a war in Ukraine, the Russian war in Ukraine. The representatives of Ukrainian states said that there was nearly 3,000 of environmental crimes conducted by Russian army, worth of over $60 billion of American dollars. It's not total cost of a war, of course, or the damage from the war. It's only environmental cost of a war. And in this included, there are about 150 million of tons of CO2 that was additionally emitted because of this war that would never happen without war. So Ukrainian state assess this greenhouse gases emission as worth of about $12 billion of dollars. And this what they want right now, they want international community to ask Russia for, or to push Russia for reparations, including this, $12 billion for additional CO2 emissions and this over $60 billion for environmental damage that was caused by the war. And right now, Ukrainian state wants to really push the United Nations to create a structure that will come up with some kind of a scheme how this reparations from Russia could be taken.
Finally, would you be able to say these things in Russia? And when did you leave?
Absolutely not. Russia is, in my opinion, it's a fascist state that you can easily compare to Nazi Germany from the 20th century, from the Second World War. All kinds of activists are under repression. I mean, it's every day that we're getting news that somebody else got to jail or there is a new criminal case. Everybody under pressure from the state. It's a feminist activist, LGBT activist, environmental activist, human rights activist. Putin regime is just mad about civil society. It wants the end of a civil society. So if you decide to criticize Putin and Russia, you will just immediately go to jail.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Vladimir Slivyak, co-chair of the Russian environmental organization EcoDefense 2021 Right Livelihood Award winner. And we will link to your reports at democracynow.org. Latest news, Norman Lear has died at the age of 101. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.